Are you tired of all of this? Of course you are. I am too. I mean, the entire world, our nation, the entire world is getting tired. We're weary. We're weary over all of these restrictions, all of the political divide, all of the requirements, the government orders. I mean, they just keep coming on, and it's constantly changing. I think as a people, we're very, very weary right now. What we need is one big vacation away from all of this. I'm fantasizing this, and I'm thinking in my own mind about my next big vacation. In fact, last night I spent a couple of hours planning what I think is going to be the ultimate long road trip for the Episcopos. I'm planning, after this thing is over, I'm planning a big road trip. I just want to get in the car and go. And so I'm planning all of these things where there's not going to be any, you know, hopefully there won't be any masks, or there'll be complete freedom. And, you know, we used to hate to find a crowd when we're traveling. Now I'd love to see a crowd. That's how much I think we're all chomping at the bit to get out of here and just get free again. Well, you know, I was even fantasizing. What would I do to make it exciting? What would I do to change it up a little bit? So my mind started to run away with me last night, and I'm thinking, you know, I never do this, but I could pick up a hitchhiker. That would be kind of, I'll pick up a hitchhiker, put him in the front seat, and then as soon as he gets in, I would begin a conversation with an imaginary friend. I think that would be fun. And look over and see what he looks like. Or I thought, well, maybe I'll have Judy get one of those erasable markers, and she could kind of connect the dots on the windshield of the bugs into a baby Yoda or something like that. Or I thought, don't tell her this. I was thinking about this one. Maybe what we could do is I'll wait till she falls asleep, and then I'll turn the radio on. I'll find some static. I'll turn it on really loud. Then I'll wake her up real quick and act like we missed the rapture. That's what happens when you get bored. You start thinking of crazy things. You want to somehow make life a little bit more interesting. And, you know, unfortunately, there are some people who are bored with God. I hate to say that, but they are. They're kind of bored. They've heard lots of sermons about what God is like, and there's no real excitement in their relationship with God anymore. And they're uninterested, to be honest, spiritually. There's lots of people like that. I can tell you that that's a pretty sad state. And the reason is because God is not boring. He's not boring. In fact, the God of this universe, the God of heaven, is the most creative, the most interesting, the most exciting, mind-blowing person that you could ever meet or know or understand. God is absolutely amazing. And if you're a student of the Bible, you know that this God says something sometimes and does some things that don't quite fit in your understanding of God. So God, in some ways, it challenges you when you read about him and when you get to know him. The more you get to know him, the more you realize how maybe you can't figure him out all the time. And the book we're going to look at today is going to shake a little bit of your understanding of how God operates. The book is from the Old Testament. It's Obadiah. Let me give you some background on Obadiah. First of all, what's very interesting about this Old Testament book is its audience is not the Jews. Obadiah is not writing to God's people, the Jews. He's not writing to Hebrews. He's writing to the people of Edom. The people of Edom. Who are the Edomites? The Edomites are blood relatives of the Jews. So they have the same father, in that the patriarchal father of Abraham all comes, the Jews, the Edomites all come from Abraham. Now, Abraham had a son named Isaac, and Isaac married Rebekah, and Isaac and Rebekah had two sons, Jacob and Esau. The Edomites are descendants of Esau. Remember Esau? Esau was the one who sold his birthright. The birthright was recognized. This is going to recognize you as the firstborn son. Lots of perks with that. And he sells his birthright for what? You ready for this? Lentil soup. Yeah. He sells everything for a bowl of lentil soup. Maybe I would do it for some spaghetti, but not for lentil soup. And this must have been really a tremendous recipe for Jacob, because he convinces his brother to give up everything he owns for it. Esau and his descendants settle in the land of Edom. Edom actually means red, because in Genesis 25, it says that when Esau was born, he came out red. Now, he didn't come out bright red. He came out with kind of a red pigment in his tone of his skin. And it was hairy. He was hairy, it says. So he came out red, and that's why they call Edom red. Edom is today not in Israel. Edom is in the country, would be in the modern day country of Jordan. So that's the Edomites. Obadiah is preaching not to the Jews, he's preaching to the Edomites. And he's got two messages about what God is like. First message: God controls world affairs. The world affairs are controlled by God. Maybe we need to be reminded of that these days. Everybody's so uptight about what's going to happen. What's going to happen? God controls it all. Notice Obadiah begins by calling God the sovereign Lord. Look at these verses here. The vision of Obadiah, this is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. We have heard a message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, rise up, let us go against her for battle. See, I will make you small among the nations. You will be utterly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you. You live in the clefts of the rocks and make your home on the heights. You who say to yourself, who can bring me down to the ground? You notice there, Obadiah calls God the sovereign Lord. Pastor, what does it mean when the Bible calls God sovereign? It means, first of all, it means that God has a will. Now, not like a will in testament. He has a will. He has a plan that can never be thwarted. In other words, God always, always, always gets his way. Whatever he wills must take place. It must come to pass 100% of the time. Whatever he wills for people must come to pass. Whatever he wills for the nations must come to pass. You need to remember that. He is sovereign over the affairs of men and over the affairs of nations. Now, does that mean that we who are making decisions then are not responsible for our decisions? Because ultimately it's God who controls things. No. No. There's a clear no to that in the Bible. And the reason for that, the reason why we are always responsible, ourselves, leaders, nations, they're always responsible for whatever decisions they make, is because we have what's called a free will. Let me explain this to you. God has given us the ability to have complete freedom to make decisions. You're going to make literally hundreds of decisions today. You have a free will to do that. Completely free. Here's what you don't have. You don't have the power to determine what will take place after you make those decisions. That's already been determined by God. So let me give you an example from my world. Unfortunately, I've had this happen too often. I'm in my study, have a counseling appointment, a couple comes in. It's not always the husband, sometimes it's the wife, but it could be the husband. He's got a good wife. She's not perfect. She's not perfect, but she's been faithful and she's good. And he decides, I'm bored. I want a trophy wife, whatever. And he divorces her. Now, does he have the freedom to make that call? Absolutely. He's got a free will. He's going to make that call, whether what, no matter who says what, he's going to make it. He has the freedom to do that. Does he have the freedom to choose what's going to happen after he makes that call? No. No. That's been determined by God. You can decide what you're going to sow. You can't decide what you're going to reap. God holds that card. He holds that decision. So that's what sovereign means. We have a free will, but God's sovereign control determines what happens in the end. Look at what Obadiah says about Edom in verse 4. Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, we'll explain that in a minute, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. You're wondering where that expression came from. It came from right there. You're going down. God says, I'm going to bring you down. He's saying to Edom, you can choose to be a bully, and that's what they were. You can choose to act like pirates. You can destroy human life and dignity. You can choose that, but you can't choose how long you're going to do that. That's my decision. I am sovereign. I ultimately control what happens in the nations of the world. And for you, Edom, I'm deciding it ends now. Now, the next part of what I'm about to tell you is where people really struggle. And it was we already read it in the first verse. But do you remember what God said? He said this. I'll remind you. He said, let us, who's us? God and some other nations he's going to call. Let us go against Edom for battle. In other words, God, in essence, is going to organize a war. Well, wait a minute, Pastor. That's not my understanding of who God is. I thought God's a God of peace. Why would God organize a war? Listen, you're going to have to allow Scripture to stretch your understanding of who God is and his ways. You know, Leighton Ford, who was a brother-in-law to Billy Graham, was on a staff. He once said that we believe in a God who's the maker of the universe. But can we accept a God who's the shaker of the universe? Read the book of Revelation. It's going to blow your mind of what God not only allows, but what he will do, what he will ordain. Are you willing to accept the fact that God is in, who takes total control of the world's affairs, may use the wars of men to accomplish his purposes? Is he good? Absolutely. Is he perfect? Absolutely. Are his purposes for mankind good and holy? Absolutely. But he may use the wars of men to accomplish his sovereign purposes in the world. Look at James chapter 4. Look what it says here. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your own desires that battle within you? You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. What's that saying? It's saying that God is a God of peace. He is, right? Jesus is the Prince of Peace. But mankind says what in those verses? They're making choices all the time out of what? Their selfish, sinful motives. War, strife, difficulty, all come from man's sinful nature. How does God respond to those choices? Obadiah is saying that God sometimes will even use those choices, use the wars of men to accomplish his purposes, to eventually, listen, bring peace and justice and repentance and order back to a situation. Psalm 135, the Lord does whatever pleases him in the heavens and on earth. He struck down the firstborn of Egypt, the firstborn of people and animals. He struck down many nations and killed many kings, Sihon, king of the Amorites, Og, king of Bashan, and all the kings of Canaan. He gave their land as an inheritance to his people Israel. Your name, Lord, endures forever. Your renown, Lord, through all generations, for the Lord will vindicate his people and have compassion on his servants. God does what he pleases, and he may even use the wars of men to determine his sovereign plan for the nations of the world. Let me tell you the history of the Edomites. This is why God was so angry with them. You've got to understand some geography first. The land of Edom sits to the south of the Red Sea. I have been there. In fact, we don't go every time we go to Israel, but we have on occasion gone there. It's very arid. It's a dry land. And Edom was nestled in the solid cliffs of rose-colored granite. Let me show you some pictures here. So you actually see there a city in granite rock there. Let's turn to the next one there. Yeah, keep going. Yep, next one. Actually, stay right there. That's a small, narrow passage. They would go in and out to the city. Actually, if you remember Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, that last movie they made, they ride off into the sunset and they ride through that actual passageway there. I'm going to talk to you about that in a moment. But that was Edom. I've been there. It's a city in the rocks in the middle of the wilderness. And it had a natural protection boundary to it. And as a result of this fortress-like position, the Edomites behave like they were pretty much in control of everything. They were indestructible. They had a sense of security, all self-sufficient and proud. You know how they made their wealth? They weren't a big nation where they would conquer other nations, but the people around them, which were Jewish people, they would go out like bandits and they would plunder the nearby cities. They would rape, they would steal, they would kill like pirates, like parasites. And then they ride back through that single mountain pass back to their homes that were nestled in the cliffs of solid rock. But there was another reason why God was so angry with them. And that's when the Israelites were traveling to the land of Canaan. Now listen, you'll remember this. When they came out of Egypt, they had to pass through the land of Edom. And they asked permission to pass through Edom. And do you remember what the response by the Edomites were? No, you cannot pass through our land. These are blood relatives of the Jews. And the Israelites said to them, we have to go through your land. God is leading us this way. We'll march only through the main thoroughfare. We'll pay you even for the water and for the food we use. But Edom would have none of their requests. Pride. Pride. What does the Bible say about pride? It says a lot of things about pride. Proverbs chapter 6, it lists seven things that God absolutely hates. Look at this. Look at the first one. There are six things the Lord hates, no seven things he detests. Haughty eyes, top of the list. Proud eyes. Proverbs 8, later on, says, to fear the Lord is to hate evil. I hate pride and arrogance. Well, Edom is full of that, full of pride, full of arrogance. And so God finally says, it's going to end. The sovereign Lord controls world affairs. He controls the nations. And he will, yes, even use what's called an envoy or messengers. He'll call a variety of nations to deal with Edom. The last of which, by the way, was Rome. The Edomites ceased to exist after the Romans conquered them in the first century. In fact, do you know who one of their last survivors was? It's a name you're familiar with. Herod the Great. Yep, Herod during the time, the Christmas story. Herod did two things well. He built things and he assassinated people. He was incredibly jealous and proud. It was this Herod who, at that first Christmas, sends out the order to kill all those little Bethlehem boys 2 years and under. He actually believes in his pride he can assassinate the coming Messiah. God always has the last word. Remember that. He controls the nations of this world. He controls world affairs because he is sovereign. Number two, second message that Obadiah has for these people is that God will cover his people, the Jews. And the big picture truth you can draw from that is that God has your back as a believer. He's got your back. In the book of Genesis, God makes a promise to always protect his people. You know what it's called? It's called the Genesis 12:3 principle. Let me read it here. The Lord said to Abram, leave your native country, your relatives, your father's family, and go to the land I will show you. And I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be blessing, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you. That was an unconditional promise to Abraham and to his descendants. He says, I will always have your back. I will bless those that bless you, and I will curse those that curse you. It still applies today. You say, well, Pastor, wow, you look at the Jews. They've experienced a lot of suffering. It's like, you know, in the that play in the movie, what's the one I'm thinking of? Teve, Fiddler on the Roof. And he says, Lord, why don't you choose somebody else for a change? They have gone through a lot of suffering. Much of that has been their own doing. God said, if you chase after idols, I'll chase you out of this land. I'll bring you back, but I will take you out. They are a stubborn and stiff-necked people sometimes. Of course, they rejected the Messiah, and God is purifying them right now. That's what he's doing. And we saw a couple of weeks ago, through the abomination that causes desolation, that will be the ultimate purifying before he saves all Israel and that remnant that will be saved during the tribulation. Obadiah repeats this principle to the Edomites in verse 10 of the first chapter. He says, because of the violence against your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame and you will be destroyed forever. The Edomites refused to help the Jews when they needed them the most coming out of Egypt, and they constantly plundered the Jews like pirates, even though they were relatives. Obadiah prophesied that Edom one day will cease to exist. Today, there's no Edom. We have the Petra in the wilderness there, but there's no Edomites. There's no Edom. But there's an Israel. I will bless those who bless you. I'll curse those who curse you. You look at history, folks. What has happened to every nation that has cursed Israel? Babylonian Empire, gone. Persian Empire, gone. Roman Empire, gone. Greeks, gone. Nazi Germany, gone. Even Britain. During World War II, Britain governed the Holy Land. They were instructed by the UN to facilitate the establishment of the Jewish nation by the United Nations. You know what they did instead? They gave most of the land to Arabs, and they allowed illegal immigration into Palestine. They even denied the Jews entry into Britain when they were being exterminated by the Nazis by strict immigration quotas. They took some children in, but that was it. They even curtailed immigration by European Jews into Palestine. What's the result? Where's the British Empire today? There's no British Empire. It's declined and its influence decreased. Look up here. The United States needs to be Israel's friend. Why? Because God covers his people. He's not done with the Jews yet. And he will bless those who bless them, and he will curse those who curse them. It doesn't mean everything they do that they do as a nation is right. But we need to line up and support them. And it's been actually a refreshment to see in the last several years how America has done that. You need to remember that. Some of you right now are so discouraged as Christians, as believers, New Testament believers. You're fearful. And I know there's a lot to be concerned about right now, but you need to remember, God covers his people. He's got your back. Look at Luke chapter 17. You know, this is a misunderstood verse. This is constantly taken out of context. Jesus said to his disciples, things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anybody who through them they come. It would be better for them to be thrown into sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. And I hear all the time, it's talking about children. It's not. It's not talking about children. The context there clearly is about believers. Jesus is referring to the church, to believers. The language is very strong. Do you know what a millstone is? Again, if you go with me to Israel, and I hope all of you do one day, I hope you put it on your bucket list. Need to go to the Holy Land. Forget about Alaska and all these other places first. Go to the Holy Land. A millstone, every time we go there, we see a millstone. Why? Because they make a lot of oil and wine there in the Holy Land. And the millstone is this huge stone. And it's usually roped to a donkey or to a horse. And it walks around in a circle. There's a groove that the stone is in. And they put the grapes in there and the olives in there. And it crushes them. Huge stone. Greek word is melinos. The picture is anybody that causes one of my children, my people, to stumble or fall or put stumbling blocks in their way that hurts their relationship with God. Woe to that person. I will put a huge rock around their neck and then I'll throw them into the sea. You know, the Italians have a phrase for that. You're going to sleep with the fishes. God's got your back. He's got your back. He covers his people. Look at how Obadiah ends his vision in verse 19. People from the Negev will occupy the mountains of Esau, and people from the foothills will possess the land of the Philistines. They will occupy the fields of Ephraim and Samaria, and Benjamin will possess Gilead. The company of the Israelite exiles who are in Canaan will possess the land as far as Zarephath. The exiles from Jerusalem who were in Sephard will possess the towns of Negev. Deliverers will go up to Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. Let me explain that to you. You know what that means? Let me tell you, this is getting real complicated here, but it's talking about the boundaries of Israel. What is Israel? During the millennial kingdom of Jesus Christ. One day, when the Lord returns, he's going to set up Israel in his kingdom from Jerusalem. Let's go, quick overview of end times, just to remind you. What's the very next thing on God's agenda? Answer, the rapture. Jesus is coming back first invisibly to get his people. It's imminent, could happen at any moment. What's the next thing on God's agenda after that? Well, at some point in there, there's going to be the rise of this political world leader, the Antichrist. Originally going to be a peacemaker. He's going to solve the Middle East problem. He has a false prophet with him who is his religious sidekick who's going to lead a worldwide universal religion. And that leads into a seven-year period called the tribulation period. Catastrophic things happening, supernatural things happening, terrible judgments on the earth. And at the end of that time will be the Battle of Armageddon. When you go to Israel with me, you'll see it. What Napoleon called the perfect battlefield, this huge battlefield, the Valley of Megiddo. Jesus comes back to rule the nations of the earth. Where? From Jerusalem, he's coming back to the earth to fulfill all of the Old Testament prophecies about Israel's kingdom and the Messiah who will sit on the throne. Jesus will take up residence in Jerusalem, and finally, the promise to Abraham to fully possess this land will be realized. They've never had the boundaries. They've never had the boundaries that Abraham was promised. Edom today is in Jordan. Israel has never possessed all the land that God promised Abraham. But one day, Obadiah sees the day where God gathers a remnant from all four corners of the earth to finally possess the land he promised the Jews. so long ago. God is in control. God is in control of all that's happening in the world. Lots of fear in the world today. Lots of fear. And sadly, among believers. Believers are so upset and fearful. Maybe it's time for you to do a Bible study on the word fear. I'm telling you, if you do, you're going to see clearly two phrases, both Old Testament and New Testament. You'll see them, two phrases. One phrase, fear God, no question. You need to have a healthy fear of the Almighty. Not a cowering fear, but a healthy fear of God. And secondly, you'll see this phrase over and over again, especially by Jesus, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Why? Because God is in charge. There's a scene in C.S. Lewis's book, The Silver Chair, where Aslan, who of course is a type for Jesus, the great lion, couched near a refreshing stream of water, and Jill, who is there, is desperately thirsty, but she's kind of intimidated by Aslan blocking her path to the stream. And Aslan invites her, if you're thirsty, come and drink. Will you promise not to do anything to me if I do come, says Jill? I make no promise, says Aslan. Do you eat girls? Says Jill. Oh, I have swallowed up girls and boys and women and men and kings and emperors and cities and nations, says Aslan. Oh dear, says Jill. She comes a step nearer. I suppose I must go and look for another stream then. Aslan says to Jill, there is no other stream. Lewis then writes, it was the worst thing she ever had to do. But she went forward to the stream and she knelt down. And she began scooping the water in her hand. It was the coldest, most refreshing water she had ever tasted. Translation. Kneeling down to trust Jesus is the start of a fearless life. You won't need to be afraid anymore. Because every step you take towards Him will quench your thirsty soul. Nothing else can. Let me pray with you. Father, thank you for this prophet who gives us a vision today that we can live with. It gives us hope. It gives us direction, especially with all this uncertainty in the world and fear. We do not have to be afraid because you're in control. Not only you're in control of the nations of the world and you raise up kings and you bring them down, but more importantly, most importantly, you're in control of our lives. We never have to be afraid of walking towards you. And you promise us, if we do that, you'll give us living water. Your life will flow through us for eternity. Thank you for your great plan for us. Thank you that you are sovereign. It's in Christ's name I pray. Amen.